originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 201, and also to those of you tuning into our website. That's www.horseracingradio.net. So a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. Please, if you are able to help, visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight was the regular rider of 2007 Kentucky Derby runner-up and Breeders' Cup Classic runner-up Hardspun. He's the Maryland all-time leading rider in Maryland. He was the recipient of the George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award in 2013 and the Mike Venezia Award in 2016. He became the 15th rider in history to win 6,000 races, is the 10th all-time leading jockey by number of wins with 6,860 victories, over $127 million in earnings and counting. He's not done yet. It's an honor to introduce jockey Mario Pino. Mario, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Christina. Thank you for having me.
So glad to get you on the show today, Mario. You start riding at Delaware Park tomorrow.
Yes. Yep, opening day's tomorrow, and I'm on 2 horses tomorrow, yep. Hoping it's on the grass, but yes.
You have to be excited. You've been leading rider at Delaware Park as well in the past. You've had so much success there. You've been spending a lot of time the last couple years at Presque Isle. So tell us why you decided to make a change.
Well, I kind of made a change. Presque Isle has been really good to me. You know, I loved that. I did a lot of success there, but I figured it's time for a change. And most of my family's in this area, so and there's more opportunity in this area, being in the Mid Atlantic area. So, and there's a lot of places to go. So, and you can get on some good horses here, and that's why I came this way. And, you know, nothing taken away from Presque Isle. It's a great place, and I did well, like I said. But, you know, sometimes you got to get a change. And that was my reason why.
Well, as I mentioned in the introduction, you had just so much success in the Mid-Atlantic region. I myself rode in Maryland, and you've been an idol of mine for a long time. As I mentioned, you're Maryland's all-time leading rider. That is such an accomplishment, given the fact that so many great riders have come through Maryland, Edgar Prado, Kent DeSormo, Chris McCarron, just to name a few. Right. And you're the all-time leading rider. So tell us who you will be riding for here in the Mid-Atlantic region.
Well, I've ridden for, Michael Dickinson a lot, and since I've been back, and I have also won a race for him the first time I the first time I rode at Pimlico in 6 years, and I ended up winning the race for him. So that was pretty neat. Not being there for 6 years and to win that day was great. It was riding a nice filly for him in the Augustan Stable owned horse. So, and then I'll be riding for him and maybe Jonathan Shepherd a little bit. And, I'm just trying to, build up. I haven't been here that long, only about 2 weeks from Florida. So it's just a building stone. But there's a lot of other people I'm looking forward to riding for.
Well, you've only, I believe you've won 5 races so far this year, ridden 5 races anyway. You usually take the winters off. And
yes.
What's the reasoning behind that?
Well, Christina, it's like, when you ride all these years for 38 years straight, and actually the last 5 years or so, I've taken off 3 or 4 months out of the year. Just to refresh myself, and just get my, just get that hunger back. And since I was in Florida, I lived there, so I just rode in Presque Isle and then came back to Florida and just, sat, just relaxed for 3 months and cracked myself back up and get that hunger back, like they say, It's always good to refresh yourself and get that want back, and I always came back real good, and I kept myself in shape just to come back, and when I don't feel like I have that hunger to come back, then I know it's done for me. But right now I still have that hunger, and I'm just going to keep on. And I actually enjoy riding. I love the horses, so that's my that's what I'm at right now.
Wow, you've been riding 38 years. You're 56 years old. I told an owner friend of mine in Maryland that I was having you on the show, and he texted me the other day. I don't remember what day it was. He goes, wow, he can still ride. He's still got it. I mean, you haven't slowed down a bit, Mario. And let's take a minute now to go back to where it all started. 38 years ago, you won your first race at Bowie Racetrack.
Right.
And I know Bowie very well, as far as I used to work horses at Bowie. It was not a functional racetrack when I was there, but a lot of history there. And tell us how you first got involved in the sport.
Well, I was always around horses all my life, not race horses, but riding horses in Pennsylvania. So, we actually had like a boarding farm, and one of the guys that worked at Delaware Park actually had a horse at our boarding farm. It was a yearling. He was getting ready, and he told me he should be a jockey to me. And I was like, wow. You know what I mean? I said, well, what's it, I didn't really know about a jockey and what was all that going on. And I was really young at the time. So he said, well, come to the racetrack with me and I'll show you. And it actually was at Delaware. So I went with him one morning to the races, to the morning. And went to the rail and saw the horses going by, how they're, riding, the speed of the horses. And it just hit me just right then. I got the bug right away. I said, this is really neat. I can really do this. And so that's how it kind of like all began, and I just actually went back to school and just, it was in my mind all the time to be a jockey. I was a little worried about the weight because I really wasn't really that small to be a jockey, but I worked at it and kept my weight down all these years. So, and that's very hard to do, but I, disciplined myself and, I love the horses and I love the riding. I love to compete. And that's how it all kind of came to be.
And you rode show horses prior to actually riding thoroughbreds then. So do you believe that was a good foundation you had underneath you?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I think that, the show horses kind of introduced, you get, it's like you get into the mind of the horse more. You have more like you become a better horseman, being around them all the time and taking care of them and riding them. And the show horses, it's not exactly like the race horses, but, it's the same. You're around the animal. And a trainer used to tell me that the first, you got to be a horseman first to be a good jockey. And he said, that's the first thing you got to be, is a good horseman. And I kind of clicked, you know, kind of got my mind, and I just, you know, learned everything I could. And like when I came to the racetrack, it wasn't like I was scared of the horses or anything like that. I was still, you know, I knew, had the basics down. So it kind of gives me a good foundation to when I started riding. I think it gives you a little edge when you have that in your background.
Well, and I'm assuming if you grew up with a family that had, you know, a boarding stable, that they probably put you to work in the barn.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you had to do all the work, get up, do all the work before school, me and my brothers. So we kind of learned that work ethic, too. And, yeah, it kind of sets you up because, you know, as a jockey, you have to go to work. You know what I mean? It's not like it's given to you. So that work ethic kicked in, and to this day, you know, me and my brothers, we all, you know, we're not lazy, put it that way.
Well, your brothers also are in the industry, and tell us what they do.
Well, one brother's a horse trainer, and my other brother's a blacksmith.
So it's in the blood.
We're all into the horses.
Yeah.
And he shoes race horses, and my brother trains race horses.
And you've ridden for your brother in the past.
Yes. Yep. Ridden many winners for him. Yep.
That has to be a special feeling when you get in the winner's circle with your brother.
Yeah, it's a good story about that because I was going for 6,000 wins, and I needed one more win, and it was at Laurel. And you never know when you're going to win your 6,000th win. You know, actually that day I rode like five horses, and I needed two wins that day, and I won one earlier, and there were a few other horses that looked like they could win. They were second, third. Then I came to my brother's horse, and it was a feature race. And I said, and actually my mother was there and my other brother, and I needed two more. And they were and my kids and my wife and everybody was there. And I said, God, it's narrowing down. I only have two more chances left. And I rode for my brother in the eighth race. And I actually won my 6,000th win on his horse.
Wow.
So everybody was there. Yeah, it was like, you know, you're coming down, everybody's coming that day thinking you're going to do it. And, you know, as a jockey, you can never plan when you're going to win. But it worked out just fine, you know, winning that 6,000 and for him and everybody there too.
Family affair. That had to be just an amazing day. Your
6,000th
victory. Only 15 other riders have done it, so that's amazing. And tell us about that feeling, though, when you're right getting close to a milestone and, like, all that pressure's on you. How do you deal with that?
You have a lot of people asking how many you need, so it kind of builds up, you know what I mean? They always say, how many you need? And I got, ten, or whatever it is, you know? So everybody keeps an eye on you, and you want to get it done because everybody's waiting. You know what I mean? So there's a little bit of pressure there, and you know everybody wants to be part of that. Even you know the trainers or owners, they want to be part of that 6,000th win. You know, so if they put you on the horse, they want you to win. But like I said, you never can really plan on that, and there's pressure there. You know, you walk out there, you're on the horse and saying, well, looks like I should win this race and maybe run second, you know what I mean, or something like that. So there is pressure. Now, I said to that day when I won my 6,000, everybody came that day, my family, like I said, and I said, this is more pressure than riding hard spun because everybody's looking at you like it's an easy game, but it wasn't, but it all worked out great, and you know, you couldn't ask for no more than that ending. It's like a storybook ending.
It really is. You're not
like
I mean,
my wife pulled my kids out of school to go over there, so it was really nice. Yep.
That had to be amazing. And you're only, what, 140 wins away from 7,000? I mean, you're just...
Yeah.
You're still going strong. And so tell me, when you won that 6,000th race, was that an even better feeling than it was when you won your very first race at Bowie Racetrack?
Well, actually, the first time I won at Bowie Racetrack in 79, I actually didn't really know I won. So it was at Bowie, and I'll never forget the day because nobody forgets that. But anyway, yeah, I got up just by a nose on the outside from last. So I didn't know that I won. So I'm galloping back. So, you know, I figured, well, I don't know if I won or not because, you know, you're not experienced to know what a wire was exactly. So I'm galloping back, and I look over at the board, and there's a 7-up. So I had to look at my number to see if I could. So I peeked down and saw the 7. And now, that was a great thrill because I rode, I must have rode like 18 or 20 horses before I actually won a race. And, yeah, that was a great thrill. But winning 6,000 is really special because it's in, you're getting into the history there. You know, you're getting into the riders of all time. You know, the names on that list are just, if you look at it, they're just Hall of Famers from one to the next, you know. So to win 6,000 and on, going on to win 7,000 almost, you know, I'm very blessed to even get that far. And I'm still, you know, can still compete well, and I feel good, and I love what I'm doing, so why not keep going?
You are part of an elite group. Joggy Mario Pino joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So looking back, Mario, I heard stories about when you were first starting out. You'd ride a horse, and then you had to walk him out in the barn. You had to cool him out.
Oh, yeah. That's funny you heard that story. That's true. It's true. I was working for Joe Candy at the time in Belmont Park, and he named me on a horse, Aqueduct. And I haven't won a race yet. It's like maybe my fifth or sixth mount. And, yeah, he told me, he says, when do you get done in the jockey's room, come back and walk the horse. So I like looked at him like, what? I'm a jockey now. I mean, I got. He said, as soon as you get back up, I'll come meet you at the receiving bar. And I, you know, it's kind of a funny story. I said, you know, I'm a jockey now. I don't walk the horse, but I did that. You know, got dressed and went out there, and I walked him after I rode him.
Wow.
And But he told me a lot about. He's the one that really expressed about being a horseman first. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Joe Candy, he was a very good horseman and learned a lot from him. And he had some good horses at the time, like Cox's Ridge and Temperance Hill in the barn, and a lot of other horses that were nice. And, you know, to be around them horses and learn from him. And he was an ultimate horseman, and that's where I learned from him saying that. He said, you got to be a horseman first before you're a jockey, if you want to be a good jockey. You know what I mean? So there's three things you got to be. You got to be a good horseman, you got to be a good person, and you got to work hard. And all that, and that kept in my mind, and to this day I still follow that. And, you know, cause like I said, like another thing is, to this day, if I don't miss riding, then it's time for me to stop, like I said earlier, but at this time, I don't really miss it, so I'm just going to keep riding and enjoy myself and try to ride some good horses and for good people. And, you know, like I said, that's the best, the ultimate, to be blessed to keep riding, too. That's another thing. You know, you can go out there and still feel you don't get tired. You're physically fit and your brain's good and you love it, and it all works out.
And how do you keep that fitness? How have you been fortunate in terms of injuries?
Oh, I had quite a few injuries, but I kind of like keep myself in shape all the time. I'm always like on off season. When I'm in Florida, I kind of we work out, me and my wife and stuff like that, every day. So I can just jump right on a horse and be just like I never left. And actually, the first horse I rode in 4 months, I mean in 5 months, was at Gulfstream, and I won the race.
Wow.
So it was like I crossed the finish line. I was fine, you know. It wasn't like I was tired, but I prepped myself before that to, you know, try to stay in shape and keep my weight down. So when I do get ready to ride, I don't have any chink in my armor kind of thing. You know what I mean? I don't want to be trying to get fit riding. I want to be ready when I start. So
that's not always easy to do, given the fact that, you know, you're trying to handle these, you know, 1,200-pound animals, and you're using every muscle in your body. So tell us in detail what your fitness routine is in the off season and while you're riding.
Well, actually, I do a lot of, in my fitness, I just do a lot of yoga. I do some running. I do some weights, a lot of reps on the weights. And just do that like almost every day when I'm off season. So, in Florida, it's kind of easier to do because, you know, you're outside, you can go out for a run, it's hot, and, you know, can go to the gym or whatever. But I just keep it mostly on the yoga is really good. I learned a lot from, been doing that for like 10, 11 years now with the yoga, and it's called strength yoga, and it really helps you out. You know, it makes you looser, and, you know, and actually it gives you a good, you know what I mean? It gives you some strength too. So but yoga, I got to give that a lot of, it helped me a whole lot just to keep in shape and endurance.
I tell you, Mario.
It's kind of funny when you say yoga, people think it as, you know, you're meditating and all that, but there's different types.
Yeah.
And this yoga that I do, it's called like strength yoga. And I do it a couple times a week. And so it really helps your body to, you'd be surprised, but it helped me out and made me, and actually I think that makes you can last longer, you know, in your career by taking care of yourself like that. So I'm sure, like, you hear it all the time, you know, like Mike Smith or whatever, older rider or football players, all they have to start working out and take care of themselves to last longer. And then years ago, I think people really didn't understand that. You know what I mean? But nowadays, athletes are lasting longer because of that.
You mentioned yoga, and I chuckle because I was one of those people. I kind of laughed, oh, yoga, you know, that doesn't seem like it's very difficult. And I tell you what, I tried that for the first time last year, I think it was, and it kicked my ass. Like, it was really difficult. And I was just shocked at what kind of a workout you can get from that as well. And I remember Chris McCarron telling me he would do hot yoga. I can't imagine how difficult that would be too. So it's I definitely recommend it to anyone, really. And so you're keeping loose, you're stretching, you're doing yoga. And then what about your weight? Have you ever struggled with your weight very much?
To be honest with you, I weighed the same weight now as I did when I was 14, 15 years old. I weighed the same now as I did then.
Wow.
So when I had to start riding the apprentice, you have to do lighter weights. So I had to kind of get my weight down to do the weight. And that was going to be one of my biggest obstacles when I first started that. I thought I'd just probably last about 2-3 years maybe, you know, because I thought it'd get too heavy. But I kept working at it, and as years went by, you know, I kind of got in a routine of how to take care of myself and watch it constantly. I mean, you know, I think all jockeys, the guys mostly have to watch it almost every day, and that's what I did every day. I jumped on the scale every day just to keep it, to watch it. So, and just, you know, keep moving, never really laid around and just sat there doing nothing for one day. I always keep myself moving. So that's another thing, just kind of like trying to keep burning calories and watch what I eat, and, you know, maybe eat once a day, you know, have something light in the morning like most jockeys do and eat well at night to last for the next day, you know what I mean, and eat the right things. So that's how I kind of like, you know, I know the weight, I know what I weigh just without even getting on the scale now. That's how much, you know, like most guys, it's like, you know, you have to have dedication on that.
I've had riders tell me, Mario, that they could put their hands around their wrists and they knew exactly how much they weighed based on, you know, how thick, I guess, their wrist was. But I'm sure you're right. Like that. You know exactly by the way you feel how much you weigh. And so tell us, you mentioned maybe eating only once or twice a day, but what is it that you do eat?
Well, like you probably heard it, you know, I mean, in the morning you have something light, like a toast or something like that. You know, you have your coffee and your toast, and that should last you all day until after you're done riding, you know. And then you have a good dinner at night, like you hear it 100 times, fish, chicken, stuff like that. And once in a while you can get off the schedule, but that's – and I actually like all them things, so I can eat that. You know, doesn't really bother me. I'm not bored with it, and I eat it. And it keeps your weight down. It's just being disciplined, I think. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, like I said, you can get off the schedule once in a while, but you got to get back on it again, because as soon as you keep off the schedule for a few days, you look on the scale and it shows. But, you know, just disciplined, you know. And then that's probably the hardest part of riding, I think, staying the same weight. You know, I mean, that's probably the hardest you can do. You know, riding is dangerous and it's all that, but keeping yourself and try to ride good horses and do the best you can. But that weight has killed a lot of guys, you know, in the long run, you know, that shorten their careers. So that's, to me, I think the weight is probably the hardest.
Folks,
I've been blessed to keep it down, and so
Mario,
doesn't bother me as much anymore.
We have to take a very short commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanent Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use their monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Penna of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcotte. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too, and I thank you.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
As the field comes off the turn, it's Hard Fun digging down. First defense right there in his throat latch. Those two, nothing between them with just one furlong to go. Teufelsberg is six lengths behind them at the 16th pole. Hard Fun first defense. They're both giving their all here. And it is Hard Fun with absolute position, turning back the bold challenge of first defense to win it here in 122-1.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Mario Pino. Mario, we just heard the replay of your victory aboard the Great Hardspun in the Grade 1 2007 King's Bishop at Saratoga. And that was one of the most thrilling stretch drives I think I've seen in a while. What are you thinking right now hearing that replay? What do you feel?
Actually, I've been here now. I got chills a little bit because it gives you like that feeling like you were right there at that moment. You know, you get it comes right back to that moment. And that was a lot of pressure that day for me. I remember that because in his breeding, he needed a grade one win. Because he never won a grade one. The Derby, you know, he had second and third in Preakness and stuff. So in his breeding process, he needed a grade one win to, because he was being sold to the Arab, you know, Arab people bought him. I think Darley bought him. So Larry and Mr. Porter that owned him, they were trying to running the Travers, and Larry said, let's not go in the Travers because it was the same day. We'll go in the King's Bishop because it's 7/8. And we were trying to duck street sense and just trying to find a niche to duck them horse a little bit. So we ran in the King's Bishop, backing up from distance to short. You know, and I'm backing up from, you know, like I said, he'd come out of distance race. Now he's got to go back to 7/8 with a full field. And there was a lot of money involved for Mr. Porter if he could win a grade one race with a horse. So there was a lot of pressure on me that day. I remember that day going up there. And like I said, you want everything to go perfect. And sometimes things don't go perfect. So but I actually asked Larry, I said, Larry, where will we be in position? Where do you think you'll be come off long races with coming back in the sprints with these sprinters, you know? And Larry, I never forget him saying to me, he said, Mario, I trained him like a quarter horse. He'll come out running. Don't worry about it. So, and he did. He come out running. He was right up on the pace going 21:44, you know, and he was laying second right off the leaders. And first defense latched on him at the eighth pole. And I was like, wow. I knew he still had horse in him because he kind of loafed a little bit. And once he fell first degree on him and he spurted away from him again, it was a big relief off me, actually, when I passed that wire. I mean, I enjoyed every minute of it, but there was a lot of pressure for me nothing to go wrong, and nothing did. And it was a blessing that it worked out like that.
Yeah, like you, I was shocked. I remember watching the race coming off of those route races, just right there pressing that fast pace. And then, of course, turning for home, first defense came right to you. You were head and head, and just the determination of both from you and Hardspun was just amazing to watch. And what kind of a horse was he like to ride?
He was... You know, I've ridden a lot of horses in my life, but you can tell he was all class from day one. When he first started, he was like, when he was a two-year-old, he looked like a 3 or 4 year old. So he was just a big athlete. You know, it wasn't a big horse, but he was an athlete, and he had that blue blood in him too. So you could tell he was all class. And the first time I rode him win at Delaware Park, he went by 9 like nothing, and I said to myself, galloping out, I said, if there ever is a Derby horse, a really good horse, this is him. Because when he passed the wire, he kept on going. You know what I mean? I eased him up at the 16th pole, and I didn't get him pulled up to the backstretch. And I just sat to myself, I said, wow, this animal could be any kind of horse. And you get on one of them kind of horses like that, it's just a different feeling. Like I said, I rode a lot of good horses, but he just gives you that little special feeling. And that was him. And I you end up winning five straight after that, and he was getting better, and he got beat, and then come back and redeemed himself. And I mean, if he hit a hard crop of horses that year, I think if he didn't hit like the Curlins and Street Sense when Street Sense was at his best, he was the winner in all them races and winning easy, because we beat the third horse by many in the Derby and the Breeders' Cup. So he hit a tough year that year. So, I mean, it was gift from God. I always used to say to get a horse like that and to sit on him and knew that you could win. You knew he was a winner every time you sat on him. And, or give you a good run, you know. So, and he had that, like I said, he had that blue blood in him, and I knew he'd be a good sire, and he has been.
Mm-hmm. He definitely has been. And as you mentioned, so unfortunate that Street Sense got a perfect trip in the Derby, and he ran into of Curlin, and, you know, he was...
That was something. I didn't know that Street Sense got that trip, because, you know, I'm in front.
Mm-hmm.
In the Derby, and I turned for home, and I said, I still have a little bit more, you know. And as soon as I kind of said that, I see him roll up next to me and pass him. But anyway, but I didn't know the trip he got. And then I looked on the TV after the race. I'm watching the rerun, and I just kind of leaned back. I went, oh, my God, he never had to go around a horse but one horse, and that was me, I think. And I was like, how's this happen? If he had to go around maybe five, six, seven horses, you know, or get in traffic, you know, he might not have called me, but that's okay. I mean, I was proud of him, and, you know, there's a lot of what-ifs, and that was one of them, but that's life.
Yeah, but what a still a great run, and what a great horse. And tell us how you first got the mount.
Actually come to Delaware. I was riding in Maryland for years. I wanted to change, and Maryland stopped racing in the summer. Well, no, they didn't stop. They used to go to Colonial, so I went to Delaware. And actually, Delaware's really some tough racing back then. You know, they had some really good horses running out of there at that time of the, you know, that time, that era. And I hooked up with Larry Jones, and I started getting on horses in the morning for him. Young horses, and he threw me on this horse. He said, I really got this really nice two-year-old over here, nice-looking horse. I want you to breeze him. So I got on him, and I'm walking out to the track on him, and it's all class. And I look, and he says to me, this is our Derby horse right here.
Hmm.
So when he said that to me, I was kind of looking and thought, well, everybody says that. You know, everybody says they have that. Mm-hmm. So when I got on him and worked him, he didn't really impress me the first breeze.
Really?
I was like, no, he didn't. He was like up and back on him. He wasn't like, wow. I mean, he had the breeding and the looks to him, but he didn't really. It was the second or third time I worked him. I mean, he was just, we worked him. And then we were getting him ready for the race, and we worked him out of gate with three older horses. They were older, and he was a two-year-old, and he didn't break very well. And the time he hit the backside, they outrun me because they were older horses, and I took them to the outside of them. This is a Delaware Breezin', and he flew right by them like they were tied to a pole and opened up like five or six in the workout.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, what was that? You know what I mean? And Larry come up to me and he with the pony, and he goes, that was unbelievable. I said, oh, my God, I never, you know, just a young horse. And then that's when we knew we had something really special.
Well, and on a side note, what a great feeling that had to be after, I believe it was the year before, you were riding Sweet Northern Saint, and
right,
you were injured. And, of course, the horse went off the favorite in the Derby that year. So
That was painful.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Yeah, I never rode in the Derby, and I got Sweet Northern Saint. I mean, he was a nice horse, but I figured he'd take me, like I said, just to ride in the Derby. And he was a nice kind of horse, but... and then I got hurt, and then couldn't ride him, and he ended up almost being, I think he was a favorite for the Derby, and he didn't run well, but I've said my chances are slim and none, you know what I mean, after that. Mm-hmm. And it was the next year that I picked up Hard Spun. So in Yeah, well, you know, it's luck, a lot of luck, being at the right place at the right time. That's how it all worked out.
And then so, obviously, Bort Hartspun, he impressed you when you broke his maiden at Delaware Park, and you guys pretty much went everywhere after that.
Yeah, you came back and he won at Delaware again, and then he won at Philadelphia, and then he won at Fairgrounds, and he was just a monster. I mean, he was just dominating. And then I rode him back in the Southwest that he looked like he was 1-9 to win. That was his odds, 1-9, and he got beat. We figured that he didn't like the racetrack because he was spinning wheels and he was like moving, but he wasn't moving, and it was the worst race he ever run in his life almost. And he still ran fourth that day. And I said, well, I might not ride him back now. I knew he was better than that. You know what I mean? I just knew he was. He didn't run that well that day. And, you know, sometimes when you lose on a good horse like that, you don't get the mount back. And everybody probably wanted to ride him. You know what I mean? So you can see he was kind of special. And Mr. Porter come up to me, and he kind of leaned against me, and he kind of says, we'll get him next time. You ride him back. So it was a big relief. And then I came back and won on him at Turfway Park. I think it was called Lane's Inn or the Spiral. Mm-hmm. And he went easy, and that was his birth into the Derby. So
you finally got your chance.
The big story to all that, you know.
It's a great story. Yeah. And then tell us what that feeling was like. I can't even imagine. So you're in the Derby. You've been waiting for this,
yeah,
especially after the disappointment from the year prior. And what was that experience like?
Well, I actually really knew he had I thought he could win. You know, I worked him like a week before that, and he worked one of the fastest 5/8 ever for a horse in the going into the Derby. And we flew from Delaware to work him that day, and we worked with another grade one filly that I won a grade one in Belmont. It was a sprinter, and I'm working Hartspun against her, and I'm on Hartspun, and I'm going, wow, I hope we don't go too fast, you know, when you hook up, because he was competitive, you know what I mean? So he worked, and he passed Wildcat Betty B, which is a mare, and just floated home with his ears up and went 57 and maybe 2, I think it was. When he just had his ears right up in the air. And, you know, when you got when they're running with their ears up the last eighth, you knew there's a lot left in them.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody said that the race was blown then, you know, that Larry went too fast with Hartspun. I went too fast with him. I said, he did it easy.
Wow.
He did it easy. So, I mean, it's hard to say to go that fast and say he did it easy, but he actually, like I said, he come down there last eighth with his ears straight up. So I knew he had plenty left. And then when I went into the Derby, I said, if I can get a good break and get in a good spot with 20 horses in the race, I think he'd win. You know, I really did think that, to be honest with you. And he almost did. But it was a great thrill to ride that race, and that atmosphere in the Derby is just, talk to any jockey and you always probably get the butterflies and the feeling that when they say post time for the Kentucky Derby, look down the gate and there's like 20 lined up. So, but it was great. That was one of my highlights of my career, riding him, and so it was a blessing.
What was it like when you walk out to the track and you're hearing My Old Kentucky Home? That had to just be, had to bring out chills.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I was coming out onto him on the racetrack, and Larry Jones told me that. He said, you're probably going to get that lump in your throat when you hear that, when they start singing. And it was true. It was true. I walked around and they were singing that, and everybody was singing in the grandstand, and gets you right in the, you know, right in the heart. And like I said, I thought he had a chance to win too. So I was concentrating on that too. I was trying to keep him calm because he got a little nervous in the post-parade because of that. But, yeah, that's a thrill that everybody says that, and it's very true.
It also had to be thrilling when then you went back home to Maryland, and you were third in the Preakness. Tell us about that race.
Okay, the Preakness was, I thought, coming back home, we had a great shot, maybe the upset Street Sense, because it's shorter race, and, you know, it looked like he got by me because he had all that distance and he loves Churchill. So I figured I could, you know. And the race was speedy. There were some sprinters in there, and they opened up, and Hartspawn was laying third, and the horse ranged up outside me. And Hartspawn, like I said, he was kind of somewhat of a speed horse. He liked to get gone, and he liked to get into the race early. And I just moved out a little bit behind the two leaders, and the horse came on the outside of me, and he kind of jumped in their bridle fast, and he kind of opened up on the turn. But if you watch all the races that day, Preakness Day, every horse that made the lead at top of lane won. So I wasn't too concerned, but I knew it was somewhat fast. And he got beat about five lengths by Curlin and Street Sense. They flew by me in the last eighth, but he ran well. And actually, I didn't ride him in the Belmont, so that had some controversy, me the way they set up in the Preakness for me, but, you know, I didn't ride him in the Belmont, and he didn't run well in the Belmont. That, you know, he's kind of, that's one of his worst races, too, the Belmont in the Southwest. So I got back on him anyway, next race, and it was all fairy tale ending.
And that's what counts. You got him back, and and you know, and I'm a firm believer that when you know the horse, you know, that's obviously a such an advantage, and you knew him, and then you rode him to a second place finish in the Breeders' Cup Classic, as we mentioned.
Right.
And was that the first time you rode in the Breeders' Cup Classic?
Yes. And like you said, you know, you get to know the horse, and you knew what he liked, and he liked to get going. He was a kind of a free-running horse, you know. When he kind of took you somewhere, you want to let him just float along. You didn't want to keep restraining him. And we kind of did that in both the races that he didn't run his best race by restraining him off a pace that he could be up there comfortably. And he liked to just get going and stretch his legs and get running. That's what we learned mostly from riding him. You know, I kind of learned that you can't crank him down much, so it kind of happened to me in the Preakness where I kind of let him float by him without restraining him too much, and we had success, you know, let him do what he wanted to do, and, you know, he ran winning races, just letting him just go and do his thing. You know, he come down running, and somehow runs him, you can sit a little bit, but he didn't want to, like, you know, you're a jockey, you didn't want to keep pulling him sitting and waiting.
Mm-hmm.
You had to let him float along. That was his style. That's what he liked. So we learned from just, me and Larry said, well, just let him do what he wants to do. You know what I mean? Don't make him stay with the other horses when he wants to get by them. So we learned all that, and that was his success. That's how you run his best.
I'm going to assume he's your favorite horse you've ridden so far.
Oh, him? Oh, definitely. Yeah, I rode a lot of really, like I said, really nice horses, but he was one of them special ones.
Who else would make the list of top horses?
Oh, wow. God, I rode some really nice sprinters. I forgot so many. A lot of Maryland, probably some of the best horses running Maryland, I rode them. And, golly, I rode really nice filly called Jamila. Years ago, I rode so many, and really nice horse with Bill Ferris called Sporting Life way back at Delaware, you know. So there's so many that I forgot, you know. There's not that I forgot, but to name them, you know, be so many that I'll miss one of them.
We'd probably be here all day if you...
Yeah, if I looked at what I wrote, kind of at that point in my career, I was riding all the best ones in Maryland. The only horse that was a stake horse, I was on them. And I was lucky enough and blessed to ride them. And I went out of town and rode them, and they won. They were some good horses come out of Maryland at that time. And like I said, I was blessed to ride them.
Well, and you won, I believe, if I'm correct here, the Grade 3 Gallarette in 1980 aboard Jamila. Yeah. You mentioned, I believe that was your first graded stakes victory.
Yeah, that was a horse called Jamila Kadir. And see, if you remind me, I can remember the names. I was riding that day. And it was my first graded race. And there's a really good horse in there called The Very One, and she beat that horse that day. She was a nice filly for a good horseman. I remember that day. Yeah, I was just a kid then.
Jockey Mario Pino joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mario, it was funny when I called you to get you here on the show. Your wife answered, and she goes, "This is Christina." Yeah. And I say, "Well, this is Christina." And so it was funny. I don't run into too many other Christinas. But tell me about your family, your wife, and your kids, and how you met your wife.
Oh, my wife's father's a horse trainer, and I met her at the racetrack. She worked on the front side, and I saw her, she saw me, it all goes like that. And there was another jockey that was married to her sister, so I said, I saw Christina, I've actually been married for 31 years now, but I've known her for a long time, before that. And so we got together, and we have three girls, beautiful girls, and all my girls are kind of like out of the house now, so it's just me and her, so we can get, But I'm real proud of my girls, the way they turned out. Like I said, me and my wife are just ourselves now, and we're enjoying ourselves, and it makes it easier for us to get around and to move come here, and she travels with me mostly everywhere I go. So we're like a team, She helps me drive, or we just enjoy just being with each other. So she helps me out. She's a good wife.
I'd say so. I love it. I love it. And that's really the reason why you stayed in Maryland for so many years.
Exactly.
Good family.
My family come first. My girls all went to school in Maryland, and to go to their sports and to be raised them in Maryland. And it was good racing, too. I could have ventured out and went other places, but I just put family first, and it was great, and it turned out well. I tried not to miss any games they had or any functions they had. So it was great. I mean, I always wanted to be there when they did something or played in games or anything. It was the best I could without, I didn't want to miss nothing, as you can say, so I'm not regretting anything.
So what do your daughters do now? Are they involved in the industry at all?
My older daughter, she lives in Virginia, and one lives in Maryland. The other one just graduated from UCF about a month ago, my youngest. They're not in the industry now. They're nothing with the horses, none of them. They got their careers, and they all turned out well. I have a granddaughter. So my oldest is married, and it all turned out good, and I'm proud of that. My wife did a good job, so it turned out good, so that was a plus.
That's wonderful. Wow, you're a grandfather already. You're not that old.
Yeah. they look at me and my wife and they go, "Are you grandparents?" And yeah, we are. They think, "Oh, my granddaughter is my child."
Wow. That's awesome.
And her too. It's her child.
Now, did your daughters growing up, were they really involved? Would they come out and watch you ride?
Yeah, they used to come out on like special occasions and stuff like that, but they really didn't come out a whole lot. Mm-hmm. They come out maybe in a weekend, or if I was, ride a special horse or trying to get some kind of, you know, accomplish something like that, they would come out, and they didn't really come out a whole lot after that, you know. It's, oh, yeah, dad, you know what I mean. They, kids would say to them, "Oh, your dad, this, that, that, and that." They go, "Oh, yeah," they didn't even know. But, it's just like that. But we never brought them around much of the racetrack that much, but they liked coming, watching here and there.
Well, they have to be proud of you now, all grown up. And Mario, unfortunately, we are all out of time. This hour flew by. Can't thank you enough for doing this. You ride later today at Parks. So good luck today, and thanks so much.
Thank you, Christina. It was great. Great talking to you.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website, horseracingradio.net. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can find here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, like Trainer Talk, Equine Forum, and Express Bet Radio. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thanks for listening.